Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on what is the future of ARM technology. The ARM industry is heading into a new chapter of its existence thanks to new rules and regulations from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Artificial intelligence, virtual assistants, and new communication channels are opening doors that have never been available to companies in this space before. Today, I'm excited to be joined by a panel of leading minds from across the ARM industry who will share their insights and perspectives into how technology is shaping the industry and where technology will take companies in the future. This webinar is being sponsored by Ontario Systems. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for everyone to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. William Chris Duncombe is president of First Collection Services, a receivables management firm serving clients nationwide since 1969. Chris has more than 30 years of experience in the collection industry, serving in sales, operations, and executive leadership. Chris has received industry honors, including having been named among the top 25 most influential collection professionals by Collection Advisor Magazine, and a Hall of Fame induction by Ontario Systems, the industry's largest software provider. He is a past president of Estates Collectors Association, and he's active within ACA International. Chris Taylor is the Director of Operations and Technology at National Enterprise Systems. He has more than 15 years of financial services experience managing large, complex projects. A respected leader, Chris's expertise in developing, implementing, and integrating processes with technology has positioned him as a top performer in the collection and call center industry. Chris started his career at NES as a developer in 2005. Dan Womack is the Director of Product Engineering at Ontario Systems, where he oversees product development, quality assurance, and technical communications. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we will get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel and type in your question to submit it. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. As well, finally, I wanted to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that's what you're looking for and find the speakers that you want to hear from. With that, let's move into the discussion portion of our webinar today, what everyone's here to listen to. The first question of the day: the ARM industry has long been reluctant to adopt new technology, but that reluctance appears to be fading. To what do you attribute that change in approach? Dan Womack, maybe you can go first.
Sure. I think there's a number of different things that are causing that, and we're seeing it happen a lot quicker than we historically have. I think it's right that the ARM industry has typically trailed other industries and technology and its utilization. I think of late, we're seeing a lot of consumer preference changes, and I think that's really the driver. I think a lot of people attribute some of the change to CFPB rules or to some other legislations happening or to even case law that's happening. Even sometimes they say it's their clients loosening some of the restrictions that they have on them. But I think at the root of all of those things is really the consumer preference changes. Consumers are seeking to try and interact with businesses that they do business with through their preferred channels. Not oftentimes that's not our historic channels that we've used in our industry. And so that I think has spawned changes at our creditors level, where the creditors are now loosening some of their restrictions and rules and suggestions, as well as what the CFPB proposed rules look like is now leading into those consumer preferences. So I think it really all starts with the consumers themselves wanting to interact with us and our clients and partners and agencies and so on in the industry in similar ways that they deal with the creditors themselves, which is a lot more modern technologies than we've been accustomed to. Is that what do you guys think? Is that what Chris Duncombe and Chris Taylor, is that what you guys are seeing individually in your agencies?
I would say that what's driving it for us right now is I think the large financial institutions are finally embracing it, and they're the leaders when it comes to these types of controls that go along with the different types of technology. It's kind of a follow the leader. Nobody wants to be first. But some of these, you know, especially the large banks, are opening up their minds to the idea of it. And with that, I think that others are starting to follow really quickly too. You know, when you stand back and look at where we've come, you know, over the last 15, 20 years, from a collections perspective, especially when it's talk about compliance, I think for a while there, compliance is what has been holding us back, especially when you talk about simple things like email and text messaging. I think that we've waited maybe a little bit too long to embrace email, from a collections perspective. But we are starting to do that now. But, you know, at the same time, I think everybody realizes that we might be a little bit late to the table when it comes to using email. And it's almost old fashioned now, and other communication channels are driving that. So I think we got to catch back up to where we should have been a long time ago.
Dan, I agree with you that it's consumer preference. But what it really boils down to also is a change in our industry with the size of the agencies. A lot of the smaller agencies have been purchased and are merging with other agencies and forming larger companies. But also the technology is out there now for a lot of the smaller agencies to use some of the new technology. But, you know, the thing that is driving our company, compliance, compliance, compliance. And number two is the overall challenge of exceeding client expectations while maintaining profitability. You know, the it's tighter than it has ever been. And you've got to use technology and data to make decisions, and that's key.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that oftentimes we overlook that. I think that it not only is consumer preference, it's litigation, it's compliance, it's our creditors pushing it, but it also is that cost, it's the ROI, right? It's that ability for us to be able to do the same or more amount of work at less cost place. It's no doubt that an email is certainly less cost than a physical letter, right? So anytime you're able to do that, or a text message may be cheaper than a phone call, or having someone be able to come to your portal and make a payment is cheaper than having them call and deal with an agent. And oftentimes that technology is leading to cost savings and not only a better consumer experience and more compliant, but it's more consistent and so on, but it also aids in our ROI, which is
we are in business to make money.
That's right.
So I've heard, and so many companies seem to say. Dan, with respect to consumer preference driving a lot of the changes, is it as simple as consumers on the phone or you know, reaching out to a collection agency saying, man, I wish you would email me, or man, I wish I could do this via text message, or man, I wish I could log on to your website and have an online chat instead of having to pick up the phone? Is that sort of how that flow of information in terms of consumer preference is being sent to the companies in the industry?
It's great when it is. Oftentimes it's not. We wish it was, right? They would just call us and say, hey, if you only text me, I'd pay. Oftentimes it's what we're seeing is that outbound dialing, for example, which was a really large historic way of reaching consumers, is slowing down. Not that we're dialing less, although some agencies are, it's that people are answering less. Landlines are really a thing of the past. So there's, I think the recent data shows that it's like less than 1% of the population now has a landline. And even of those, it's single digits that are answering them. Percentages of people who have them, they answer the line. So it's essentially gone the way of the dinosaur. And so it's one of those things that out of necessity we've had to, as an industry, explore other options and explore other channels to be able to reach consumers. But it certainly is fantastic when they call us and say, you know, can I pay via your portal? Absolutely. Can you text me this information? Can you text me a balance? Certainly. But oftentimes it's not that clean. It's not that clear. It's us trying to reach the consumer and trying to find a channel that works. And often, and more often, that channel isn't just the outbound call. Although that is still a bulk of what's happening in the industry is outbound letters and outbound calls. Additional channels are tremendous augments to that body of work. So getting people to go to your portal, for example, to be able to self-remit, or at least review their account and be able to interact with you. We used to measure a lot of the KPIs by just, you know, RPCs, people that answer the phone that we talked to, that we had interactions with. And those interactions are largely changing now to be interactions with our portals and interaction with our texting engines, interacting with us in ways of their choosing and at times of their choosing. And so it is it's a mixed bag of how we're discovering that. Sometimes you know it from what's placed by your creditor. And I think that's to Chris, your point is that if your creditor is leaning into that, if the large banks are leaning into that, your clients are, then hopefully they're getting that information, they're getting that consent, they're getting that preference tracking, they're passing that to you. So you know that out of the gate with an account, how they would prefer to be communicated with, when, where, and why. So you're able to do that in the way that they already have expressed. Not have to go to discover.
And Dan, Mike, you know, one of the things that's key is, and we do first and third party work at FCS, and we push this back upstream and really try to educate our clients on ways that they can store data and analyze data to find out what that consumer preference is, where we can push that down to us when we're doing this work for them, to determine, you know, are your customers responding better to email or text or phone calls? What time of day are they responding most likely? And it's important to begin that as early in the process, like Dan's talking about with consent and how you're tracking that and what you're storing, all the way through is that customer's experience with our client. How are they communicating in all, whether it's customer service, whether it is recovery, you know, how are they communicating? And then looking at that and passing that down through even into our third party world.
I think consent's a really good topic, right? I'd say as far as these different communication channels, that's the big piece that's out there right now. Do we have consenting emails? Do we have consent to text message? Do we have consent to call a cell phone with a dialer, right? And you guys are hitting on it exactly where it needs to be hit. It needs to be done on the front line, you know, with the banks, with the financial institutions. And if they can obtain that up front, which it's going to be a lot easier to obtain than us obtaining it later on in the process, it's key to us succeeding with these different communication channels until something comes out that gives us clear direction on what we can and can't do when it comes to them.
Yeah, I think it all starts with consent. Without consent, that's the gate through which we have to pass to be able to do many of the things that the consumers want us to do and we want to do. Even past the consent, like Kristen was mentioning there, is preference windows and times and which number is best and whether it's text versus directions to portal or what the case may be. That's also really valuable information if they have it, whether it's the bank or utility company or telecom or whoever you're getting accounts from in the dentist office, if that's the case. If they have that information, if you can provide them a way to easily transmit that to you, you'll be much better off than having to go out and seek it and search for it. And certainly some consumers do call in and tell you that, but that's the minority, I think, from what we're seeing. It's from what we're hearing in the industry. It's really primarily things that you have to go out and search for.
Yeah, great.
And it's really, you know, to me, one of the most important keys to be successful in business today is to really have an open mind and view data differently than you've ever viewed it. Data is a tool, and you need to store it in a manner, and you need to work with your clients and get your clients to store it in a manner that the data can be used. Consent is, it's part of data, and you need to track it, and your client needs to track it. And if you're a creditor and you're placing primary, secondary, tertiary, you need to be able to track that and pass that all the way down the chain of who has that account and working that account for you to remain compliant. And that's one of the biggest changes in our industry is how do we track all of this? And the key to it is, you set up data in a way that it can work for you.
I think another thing as it relates to the data, I think historically the industry has viewed consent as a boolean. Yes, I have it. No, I don't. And that's really no longer the case. That's that's pretty rarely the case. Now there's all kinds of different bars for consent. On the high end, you've got the e-sign consent. And if you've reached that bar to be able to have e-sign consent, then certainly you want to be able to track and flag that and know that. On the low end, it may just be something the consumers, the creditors pass to you to be able to call their cell phone. There's lots of things in the middle, being able to text or being able to leave messages or when to be able to do that. And so it's become a lot more of, in my mind, than just a consent field or flag. It is all the metadata around contact management, which is best time to call and best time to reach and most likely to be able to be responsive to and preferred methods and times and whether we have consent to text and what that might include and whether you have consent to leave messages or whether you have e-sign consent to do emails or it's a whole spectrum full of things now. And so it's all important to be able to capture, track, and store and be able to update. I think that what we're seeing with the CFPB rules that are proposed is that that looks like something that they're leaning into. I think a lot of the creditors are leaning into. And so we're at a point in time where I think that becomes really critical to be able to capture, track, and store so that you can show that you have it to be able to utilize these tools that are now available to us.
Capture, track, store, use, and share.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Miss. So. Chris, hit.
Excellent. I just want to jump in for a second and pause the discussion. And what I wanted to do is remind everybody that today's webinar on the future of ARM technology is being sponsored by Ontario Systems. In nature, evolution tends toward the complex. In the ARM industry, companies evolve by simplifying their operations. Ontario Systems, the leader in ARM technology, helps you move past integration into true optimization, where you'll be free to compete on a whole new level. From its intelligent collections platform and cloud-based contact management to the latest omnichannel solutions for texting consumers and accepting payments online, go beyond integration with Ontario Systems. To learn more, visit www.ontariosystems.com/go-beyond-integration. Thanks again to Ontario Systems for sponsoring today's webinar. I'd like to maybe move the discussion into a different part of technology. Terms like artificial intelligence and machine learning are certainly becoming more commonplace and used a lot more in the ARM industry today. Wondering maybe if we could talk a little bit about what they mean and how do they fit into the ARM industry's future. And I'll throw that open to any of the panelists who want to take that one first.
I'll start with it. Some of the artificial intelligence that we've looked at as a company have mostly revolved around the being able to replace a collector. And what I mean by that is the idea of a consumer interacting with a machine to get what they need done, mostly through, let's call it an IVR on steroids, is really what we're talking about. But that IVR being a lot more intelligent than we're using today, where it's, just press one or press two. They're actually interpreting the speech of it and trying to find a solution. Now, where artificial intelligence could go in our industry, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. When I think of artificial intelligence, I think about like inventory management and KPIs on the fly and being able to adjust strategy on the fly. And I think right now, we've come a long way with business intelligence tools that are out there. Ontario Systems offers some nice reporting tools and dashboards, but it still takes somebody looking into it and digging into it and then making the adjustment. If we can use artificial intelligence in a way where we can change our campaigns on the fly or alert somebody if something is happening that's not normal or, contact rates drop out or even best times to call during the day that we were talking about earlier, what is the best avenue to be able to contact people and when is it, when should we be making those dials or sending those emails or text messaging? That's the kind of artificial intelligence that I think the industry needs to go beyond the idea of just straight replacing a collector. Although that saying that sounds good to everybody, I'm not sure that the problem is that our artificial intelligence that is out there is not cheap. It's costly, and specifically to the type of AI that I was discussing, there isn't a lot of proven success in collections with it yet. It's very few and far between from what we've seen.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that where we're seeing a lot of it being adopted, I think a lot of it is emerging technology. It's things that are coming our direction. It's things that we're very interested in. There's a lot of talk in the industry about it. There's a lot of research. We have, in fact, some white papers that we produced on the topic, and we have some podcasts on the topic, and a fair amount of educational pieces around the topic. But there's, at this point, I think what we're mostly seeing in the industry is that it is still emerging and not maybe quite here yet, although it's getting closer, and mostly in that area of NPL, the natural language processing. Or NLP, I'm sorry, where it is that some people call it IVR or some people call it IVA. It goes by a number of different names, but essentially it's that being able to call in and have you speak and have something speak back to you in a natural language. That seems to be where it's starting, but I agree completely, Chris, that Taylor, that it really probably needs to be and ought to be, and it's heading in the direction of being able to be much more integrated into the platforms themselves to be able to do decisioning around what to call, when to call, how to do it, what should be done next, how do we do inventory management, how do we do some of that kind of automated workflow. Right now, it does have some barriers. It's fairly costly. It's not always explainable, and there's certainly an interest from the CFPB around explainable AI about what it actually is doing, mostly around the areas of how to ensure that it's compliant and doesn't have any disparate impact. They and others, we are fairly concerned about how to be able to do that in a way that both is compliant and explainable. But it's certainly something that's headed in our direction, one that we're watching really closely, one that we're actually been playing with. But trying to determine how to roll it out and where to roll it out, I think is still, a lot of companies are sorting that out.
I like to try to get away from looking at these as buzzwords, and you know, and I always joke that you've got to be aware of the sales pitch technology, where people are just using buzzwords to sell things that aren't really artificial intelligence or machine learning. But some of the key things that I'm really interested in and seeing this technology take us towards is even some of our back office work. We all scan in and append dispute letters that we receive from consumers today. And, you know, there's technology out there that will allow us to read those letters and compare them and to automatically start strategies based upon what it's learning and what it's reading in these dispute letters and making sure that we're processing them right. That's one of the things that Dan and I've had some Diet Coke conversations over. But, you know, and the same thing with using voice analytics on recorded calls, going back and looking and seeing, okay, are there things that we heard in these call recordings that we need to be looking for and starting strategies off of based upon new things that we're learning. You know, there's a lot of different things that we can use this for. It's just opening up our minds to what the real true capability of it is.
One of the things you mentioned.
Yeah, you.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say you hit it. I mean, I think we brought up a good topic there, right? Chris, you brought up a really good one in the idea of voice analytics in our industry and where we're at with it. And as far as interpreting those recordings and providing some kind of data that goes along with it. We've messed or dove into a whole bunch of different companies, different types of voice analytics. And this is another place I think that, you know, our industry is, I think, pretty still far behind where we need to be, or maybe we are where we're at right now as far as call centers go, but even outside the industry. But if you think about, you have everybody got a cell phone on them right now, and Siri on their Apple phone can interpret pretty good and pretty accurate, and everybody's got a Alexa at home that they use, or a Google Home app that they might use, and that they're able to interpret our language so good for what we want to do. But yet when it comes to listening to a recording, which you would think would be simpler, we still really aren't where we need to be as far as voice analytics go. And I guess you can kind of, I merge that into the idea of artificial intelligence in interpreting whether a call is good or bad or opportunity areas that we need to work with that agent on. And I just, from everything that I've personally seen with it, it's the accuracy rate of voice analytics is really not that great. I mean, we've gotten a lot better than we were, but there's a huge opportunity for us to use AI and voice analytics in a better fashion than we are.
One of the other things that really drives and powers AI, or whatever you whatever buzzword we're going to use, machine learning, is really all that data. And so we talked about data, our perception around data probably needs to be shifting and morphing and being able to get and store as much of it as we can for that AI engine. So being able to understand what is happening across a pretty broad set of data is where that is strong. And I think that that's where we're trending towards, and we're getting that direction. I think it's where we're going to see it emerge more, as in those really large pools of data to be able to do that diagnostics, which is, I think what you're mentioning, Chris Taylor, being able to dive into that automated workflow is a great place for this to expand, and probably one that we'll see in the near future.
You know, I like to break data down into three types: data that we receive from our clients, data that we purchase and append to accounts, and data that we develop from our work efforts. And it is really, really important that we, again, have very open minds towards this data and how we can use it as a tool to enable us to make better decisions and to automate our workflows. You know, if we go in and we use these PDFs that we're scanning in from these dispute letters and figure out, okay, how many of these are robo dispute letters that we're getting or that we've received before, and really help us and enable us to make smarter decisions, there's a lot of power in that.
And having all that data either together or commingled or accessible to each other, I think is going to be one of those prerequisites for being able to really leverage that artificial intelligence. So getting, storing that data, thinking about other ports of data that we have and different portions of our business, bringing that together and having that all live together or be able to talk to each other will be pretty critical.
You know, whenever you take a look today and you start looking at how do you manage people, and you know, we're all trying to figure out a way that, you know, how do we manage millennials in our workforce differently? And, you know, the key to that is one of the most important questions that we get asked a lot of times from a millennial is, why do I do it this way? Why does this matter? Why? Well, the best way to answer that question is with data and being able to provide analytics behind why you say what you say, why you call the way you call, why you do the things you do. And it's, you know, we've got to use these tools to even train people, teach people, and motivate people.
Another area where, this whole sort of concept of machine learning and artificial intelligence is also coming into play is the deployment of virtual assistants, from collection agencies, usually on their websites, helping help individuals get in additional information to make payments. Are you seeing more of that, and do you recommend those or that as a tool that agencies should be deploying?
We've seen, from our vantage point, we've seen some in the market that have popped up. They've kind of seemed to slow down. I'm not sure. It's been a little bit tricky to channel to understand what the lift has been from those. But I know that has been one of those emerging areas where people have been exploring how might the machine learning and artificial intelligence be able to play either in a portal perspective or in an IVR type perspective. I would lump largely those IVR, IVAs into that same category. Although they're different technologies and different usage, it's that virtual assistant. It's replacing a human. It's that kind of thing that Chris Taylor was talking about, is a person's doing that same role today, whether it's answering a phone or doing it through a screen chat, for example, and then being able to replace that with a virtualized bot. I think those are important. I think that they're viable in the market. I don't know to what extent. I think that the bigger play is probably what Chris was mentioning, was really that back office piece.
Yeah, I think from a virtual assistant's perspective, we're really talking a lot about, you know, wanting and willingness to pay, right? So, you know, I think that virtual assistants might be more effective on the front end, maybe in a pre-charge off world, than they would be on the back end of it. You know, somebody simply misses a payment and needs to renegotiate their current payment plan or needs 30 days to buy them time to get the money together. I would see them more effective in that area. I just really haven't seen one that's been very effective or has stuck around very long to put it to use.
I agree with what both of you have said. But I kind of really agree with what Dan said about lumping in the interactive, intelligent messaging IVRs. And Chris, you talked about that a little bit earlier. And you know, to me, those are more important than ever before and vital to the success of our future, especially in communicating with consumers today that just don't want to talk to a live agent. Because, you know, there are certain things that we have to get step-by-step information on for compliance reasons. And like whenever a consumer's wanting to dispute an account or things that we can transfer a consumer to and have them tell that information to a interactive, intelligent IVR, and that information can be stored and get all the steps step by step if they don't want to go to a website to do the same thing. That is going to be very key, important in technology for us moving forward.
And I think what we've really been talking about is outward facing virtual assistants, right? To consumers. I think there might be a taste for inward facing, and meaning maybe the idea of something to be able to help the collectors while they're on the phone, while they're live negotiating with the consumers, maybe something to guide them on their screen or through a message of some sort of communication to them, maybe without the consumer even knowing it, to help drive it to a successful conversation. I think the idea of that sounds a lot better than the outward facing ones do to me.
Yeah. Why is that?
I think that when we talk about the idea of bringing on call center reps, right? Our biggest expense and problem area is getting them up to speed and training them as quickly as we can to make them effective and profitable for us. You know, I think Chris mentioned earlier, you know, we're all here to make money, and at the end of the day, you know, an agent who is not very good, and the more time they have to waste in training to be able to be up to speed where they actually become profitable hurts all of us, right? Or the mishandling of a phone call is, I think, a huge piece that we have missed opportunity. It's hard to put a number to it, but failed negotiations where, you know, maybe a tenured call center rep who's been, you know, working, you know, at your agency for 10 years would have closed that deal, but, you know, had the newer rep asked the right questions, the conversation could have went a very different direction. And that's where I think, you know, there could be IVR, IVA, virtual assistant help there, you know, kind of all mingled together, speech analytics that help drive those conversations to be successful ones versus not.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that lift is bigger, right? So that if there's an inbound interaction where someone's come to the portal or they've called in, the odds of that lift, it's there. I mean, you certainly could get a lift from maybe $100 payment to $110 payment, or maybe no payment to a payment. But your outbounds, where you're probably a much bigger lift is going to be where you're actually interacting with the agent, or even inbound where you're interacting with the agent themselves. Being able to get one more payment a day from each of your agents, for each of the agencies on the phone right now, would be immensely impactful. I think that's the, from in my mind, why I would agree the most is that's the biggest area of lift. The biggest area of impact would be being able to get that additional payment, or maybe a 20% increase of the payment size itself on the agents. And so many payments nowadays have moved away from payment full to payment plans. And so keeping a payment plan sticky, keeping the duration low, keeping the payment amounts high has tremendous return on investment.
You bring up the topic of return on investment. So I want to jump ahead to our list of discussion topics and maybe sort of and talk about that for a few minutes. But what are the best ways to determine the expected return on a technology investment? Because that seems to be something that's popped up a few times in our conversation today.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different kind of paths, and not there's one, there's no one right answer, I don't think, but there's a couple different schools of thought. And one, Chris Taylor mentioned, is really a lot of these tools or technologies, whether it's texting or portal or chat or whatever the case may be, oftentimes are replacing an agent or can decrease the cost of your agent pool. And so there's certainly an ROI measurement that can be done there of did the investment return the expected outcome as it relates to headcount. Another one is certainly just the risk as a machine is interacting with somebody, it's doing whatever it's programmed to. So we hope as long as it's programmed corrected, that it would be completely compliant. It would be completely duplicatable. It would be available 24/7 and so on. And so there's probably a lift that can be measured. I know there's a lift, but there can be a measurement to that lift about how many complaints went down, how many suits went down, how many payments did we take after hours, how much, not just in decrease in cost, but in increase in effectiveness did we get. So kind of that combination of those two things is more of a traditional ROI, and that's still valid. But I think another portion of that ROI is just in the consumer engagement. Oftentimes we have accounts that you put cost into that you don't get any return, and that's the norm, right? You're going to have an account that gets placed, you put X number of costs into sending a letter, to making a phone call, to discover that it's not the right party, or that it's a, whatever the case may be, it's not an account you're going to keep or work. And so being able to decrease the cost and be able to increase that time frame or decrease the time frame to be able to figure that out also has a return on investment. So I think measuring the consumer engagement, how many touches did you get, not just right party contacts or payments, but how many accounts were you able to exhaust quickly with low cost? How many accounts were you able to try and target for a different segment that you may be able to have a higher yield on? So it's becoming a little bit different than it used to be. KPIs are certainly changing in the industry. To track more things than simply rate party contacts and payments. So tracking complaints and disputes and exhaustion strategies and so on that are just as important.
We are putting a very big focus in our office right now of rolling down to one target. And that is, how much time does it take a person to work an account? And if we, the time that we can shave off of that and maintain compliance and as Chris Taylor was talking about earlier, put prompts in front of them to help them make smarter decisions, make them quicker while being compliant and make their time more efficient, that is money that is in our bank account. And that's the key, because there's a lot of different things out there that you can measure, but how do you make a person's time more effective and more efficient? And, you know, because people are the key to our industry whenever we're putting them on the phone to talk to someone. How do we make decisions on an account to put accounts in front of people that they can talk to and put accounts in the back office group that need to be in the back office group? Don't even have those accounts popping up in your calling solution for people to work, because they're not serving the right purpose. How do you make the right decision on how an account is worked and where it goes, and make sure that the right time is being spent by the right people in your building? And that's a big key that we're measuring here.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So you've developed your own way of measuring ROI, and that's what I have learned over the years, is that different sellers of technology can come in with fancy spreadsheets that they'll ask you for a bunch of data to put into it to show that their software or their solution has some significant return on investment. I'd say do not just buy into those is always my feedback from anybody that might be looking at a new technology. I mean, you got to do your own, what you're expected, what reality of it is, what you expect to get out of it on that return on investment, not what the salesman's telling you.
And Mike, I look at technology partners, that you need to choose technology partners that match how you run your business and even a little bit of your personality. If you're a person that really is an open thinking person, that you really like to get in there and try things that are very future thinking, you don't want to be with a very conservative technology partner. And that's some of your due diligence that you need to do on the front end to make sure that your technology partners are good fits for you.
Yeah, picking a technology provider is certainly a challenging and tricky thing, and ROI plays into that. Just choose me every time, we'll be fine. I should say here, I guess. But joking aside, I think that the ROI question is a really important one and a challenging one, because it's one that you're likely having those discussions with, not just yourselves, but also with your creditors. You're able to go back to your creditor, but whoever's placing accounts with you, whatever that vernacular is in your world, and if they're pressing you for different rate reductions, you're hopefully able to go back to them and talk about what we can do to mitigate that, and what data would you be able to get that would already have passed through consent, that would already have this consent management, that would already enable you to decrease your cost to be able to try and do the collections, whether that's decreased skip trace efforts or increased data for you to do your analytics against, or if it's just a more likely output that you have consent to text them, for example. And so I think it plays into a much broader portion of your strategies than simply evaluating, you know, if a letter costs, make up and say a letter costs 50 cents and a text sense costs 8 cents, it's a more complicated ROI than saying I just save 42 cents. Although that's an important portion of it, there's more to it. And it plays to the compliance portion, it plays to the consumer preference portion, it plays to your interactions with your creditors, your clients portion. And so I think to Chris Taylor's point, to both of them, I think it is a broader perspective and one that needs to be taken individually and one that everybody's going to calculate a little bit differently. But we certainly are seeing changes. The historic versions of ROI are still relevant, but not as rigid as we've seen in the past. We're getting client requests fairly frequently now about changing KPIs and KPI reports and KPI dashboards and KPI measures.
Chris Duncombe, to your point about how much time does it take to work an account, how long did it sort of take you to get to, you know, to get to that one data point as being the key, and, you know, how long have you been sort of, you know, using that metric?
It is a constantly evolving metric because we have been working, and Dan can tell you this, we've constantly been working at trying to make sure that the right account is in front of the right person. And everything that we're doing is focusing on trying to maximize the right person's how they work that account and their effectiveness on it, because it is constantly evolving. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's just not an easy thing to even. That's been a driving force for me for what, Dan, about 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think every agency out there would say that the people cost is their largest cost, right? It's not necessarily the software, it's not the data, it's not the technology, it's not the building you're in, it's the people that's your largest cost. And so being able to manage that cost effectively by being able to determine what are they spending their time on, is it the right things? You know, Chris's point of if it should be in the back office, it should be in the back office and not to them. Don't even spend time on accounts that they shouldn't have. But once they get to an account, are they spending the right amount of time on the right accounts at the right time with the right mechanisms, the right tools at their disposal? So there's lots of activity around that.
Yeah, because it's, you know, there's more accounts out there than all of the agencies, all of us put together can work. Is how do we put the right account in front of the right person at the right time and work it the right way? Sounds like a good sales pitch, but you know, but it really is key to what we do. And that's the data behind everything we do.
Excellent. Chris Taylor, I think you had mentioned earlier before, you know, when we were talking about email, that the industry had sort of maybe waited too long to embrace email. And I'm curious, are there other technologies or other components within technology that the industry might be too far behind on, you know, today?
Yeah, I mentioned email, but I mean, I think we're maybe going to get to the table too late with text messaging being widely accepted as well. Right now, I mean, I think we all realize and we all know that we all get hundreds and hundreds of emails a day, and a lot of these different ones are getting filtered to our spam and to our junk, and a lot of them aren't getting read. You know, versus, you know, 10 years ago where email, you know, texting wasn't as big as it is now. And email was where everybody was checking all the time to see if they had a new message. Well, that's kind of evolved, right? And text messaging now is kind of on the forefront of all of us, where we're reading those text messages right away and very quickly in most cases. And it hasn't really become too badly spammed out with junk yet. And I think that's right now, if we don't get to the forefront of using texting more, and especially some of these bigger companies being open to the idea of texting their consumers and their clients, we might miss that boat too, because as we continue to evolve, right, new technologies are going to be coming out, new channels of communication are out there. I think that one thing that we've all, I guess, think of as taboo is social media. Social media right now, I mean, the idea of it, right, is not well received in our industry, but it's a huge opportunity that we're missing to reach out to these consumers. I think I saw some type of statistic that said, you know, I think Apple phones do it too, but social media, more time is spent on social media apps than any other apps in the world, right? And there's a lot of good data that goes behind it. So more people are spending more time on social media apps than they are on their email or in their text messaging or even just on the internet. And we're not even talking about that yet. Nobody's even opened the idea up that maybe we could do something with social media in some capacity that's obviously compliant and we're not violating anything, but being able to reach out to them somehow through that. You know, I've heard one bank recently talk to me. One thing they're working on is these banner pops. So the idea is if they have an app installed, you know, on their phone, giving them alerts, maybe when they missed their payment or when they're trying to reach them, just like we see from a lot of our apps today, where you can enable and disable alerts. You know, something to that extent, right, where we're able to have constant communication with our consumers once the relationship is established. We're not anywhere near that. But yet, you know, if you download a simple app for anything, really, as soon as you log into it for the first time, it's asking you if you would like to receive alerts. You know, we're knowing on the go about our sports updates all day long, but really nobody's trying to tell us that we haven't paid our bill.
I just hope nobody wants us to allow our collectors to communicate with them over Fortnite.
Yeah, that's. I don't think that's coming anytime soon. But social media problem. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that it's one of those areas where texting. It may surprise some of our listeners that the number of text messages sent to the United States actually peaked in 2011. Every year since 11, it's actually been fewer text messages sent in the United States, and that's largely because the communication has moved to other things. It's moved to in-app messaging, Facebook Messenger, for example, WhatsApp and Snapchat and the dozens of others in-app messaging. So I think it's a good point to say that, you know, are we two-way texting? I don't think so. There's still a staggering number of texts sent. And by and large, that's now more mainstream. It isn't just my kids talking to their friends. It's all kinds of things. I'm using my phone and get texting for two-factor authentication. I'm sorry, just logging into my email, for example. And it's becoming a business tool by and large across lots of industries, not just collections. Email, I think it's a good point to say that there's lots of spam in email. And so we've got to be able to be differentiated from that spam in order to be able to use that effectively. But I think it's still a very effective tool. Social media, I think, is imminent. I think it's on the horizon. We're going to be talking to people through Facebook Messenger. That day's coming, I think, where we'll be having to use in-app messaging, very similar to how we would do text messaging or chatting today. I think also another emerging technology here that we need to keep our eyes out for is really trying to drive all that inbound. Outbound is a struggle. It's a continual struggle to try and cast that big net to get people to be able to call us or reach out to us or engage with us as an industry. Yeah, while there is some response in that, and that's by and large what we're doing today, I think that being able to do things to drive the inbound is going to become more and more critical. And so companies that are kind of leading the front of that would be like the digital marketing companies, the things that are the banner ads you mentioned and the app messages and advertisements and Google AdWords and all kinds of other tools that we'd be able to use that the digital marketing world has largely led to be able to drive inbound engagement. I think that's another emerging technology heading our direction.
But the key to this technology is also looking at, as we use it, how do we track it? How do we use the links that we can put in a text message or the links that we can put in an email message to track that a consumer has read this, that they did receive it, and track then the preference and how they want us to communicate with them in the future. Each one of these are powerful tools that as we're communicating, we do need to track and view it as a complete way that helps us with compliance and communication.
That's a good point. I think that as these another really large emerging trend in the technology space, and one that we're really embracing here at Ontario, is really that ecosystem approach, that blending of technologies. It's probably just as important to have the latest technology as it is to have it integrated with everything else that you already have. These point solutions and these standalone solutions only get us so far. Having it all as a blended ecosystem enables that to talk to each other. Having a picture of a world where you have a communication done through Facebook Messenger that comes back seamlessly into your platform, to know that that's the best time to now do that, not to have a phone call go out to them, and now to be able to respond to them in that channel as opposed to others. And then that be able to use an artificial intelligence engine to be able to analyze what the next best step might be in the workflow. Or when that would take place, and then what other accounts might be very similar to this one that we might be able to try that first as new accounts get placed.
A perfect example is if someone's driving down the road and you call them and they're on their cell phone and they tell you it's not a convenient time to communicate, and they simply ask you, hey, I want to pay. Can you text me a link to a payment portal? And you compliantly send them that link, and they can come back and at a time when it's more convenient for them, take care of the account.
Yep, for sure.
But just ways to meet the consumer where they are in a way that is convenient for them and efficient for them.
And I think we're seeing that. One of the other things that we're going to talk through is a little bit of the proposed rules from the CFPB. I think we're seeing that from those proposed rules as well, that the CFPB is really interested in making sure, I think, from what we're able to tell in our visits with them and what we're reading from them, is they're really interested in leaning into those consumer preferences. If that's the consumer preference, is to get a text for a portal to be able to pay, then we ought to be able to do that. And they're ensuring that we're able to in those new rules, inclusive of email and texting.
And, yeah. You know, but the thing that we got to be careful of is these rules are implemented. Is if a consumer is emailing us at 2 a.m. and that we watch and make sure, and these are in some of the answers and questions and things that we've been part of, and I know Dan's been part of, and getting back to the CFPB on some of these proposed rules is, how do we respond back to them? We got to make sure we don't have auto replies tied to our emails that are responding at times of the day when might get us in trouble with FTCPA stuff.
Yeah, all of these technologies come with nuanced deployments that probably need to be talked through and visited with as it relates to individual verticals, individual markets, individual conditions, but certainly it always needs to be done in a compliant, secure way. I think we haven't probably touched on a lot of the security piece today, but that's as important as the compliance. So certainly, I think that's one of those have-to-have skills, table stake items of making sure as we're utilizing texting that you're doing it in a compliant way. And there's more to it than it sounds. Same thing with email, same thing with social media or any of the other platforms and AI.
Yeah, I think on the CFPB front, right, you mentioned that earlier and how these new rules will affect us. I think that one of the biggest pieces that I've been working on is with the limitation of the calls, you know, dropping so low. We need to make sure those calls of outbound that we're still going to be able to make are as effective as possible. And one challenge that I think we're all facing is these ideas of these robo killer apps or these different pieces of technology. I know T-Mobile does a lot with it. Some of the different types of phones. I know Apple is now getting involved in it, where they're trying to collect data to be able to mark, you know, numbers as possible, you know, debt collector or possible spam, you know, you know, some type of telemarketing. We got to do everything we can to make sure that our calls don't get lumped into those categories where now our outbound phone calls aren't even getting to the consumer, or if they are, they're going straight to voicemail. I think Apple's latest release is they're trying to track numbers you don't answer. So if you don't normally answer a call from a particular number, they're just going to start sending it automatically to voicemail. And it's like a setting that you can go in and enable or disable. As these robo killer apps and different technology advance in trying to categorize our phone calls, I think it really creates a challenge for us. A company we work with, Noble Biz, they have adopted a new technology that where you pay a fee, and this governing body helps categorize your numbers as not spam and not get you put into those categories that these other vendors are using to mark outbound numbers as spam. You know, that's one of the biggest challenges, because 6 calls every 7 days or whatever it might end up finally being when we get to the limited number of calls. I mean, we might make that on an account in a day right now, and to have to spread that out over a week, you know, it sounds extreme. So we need to make sure every one of those calls count.
For sure. And it is interesting to what is in those rules as it relates to emails and text and other channels beyond the call caps. There's a lot to those rules that we've been studying and visiting with the CFPB on, and what that might end up looking like is going to be, it'll be interesting for all of us to watch. But I think it's certainly at its core, at its trend, is really to try and lean in, I think, to consumer preferences and being able to utilize those channels, although there is a number of caps and restrictions and rules around them. I think there are about a half of, speaking to your solution you mentioned, there's about a half a dozen or so solutions that I'm familiar with in the marketplace that do something similar as a service to be able to help with your robo-blocking, robo-calling challenges, being able to help. They hate the word whitelist, but I'll use that anyway. Just whitelist your numbers or be able to upgrade your numbers. There are about, there's probably 200 companies. There's probably about 6 or 7 the main ones though that work with the carriers that are providing that technology. First Orion, you know, for example, to be able to do that call blocking and restricting the calls. And so that's a whole nother trend. That's an example, I think, of artificial intelligence being used against our industry. It wasn't targeted to be against our industry, but it's worked out that way, where it's AI being used against us. And so AI, I think, being able to be used for us is going to be an important piece for us to embrace and embrace quickly.
Excellent. We've only got a minute or two left before we wrap up our conversation. And maybe what I'd like to do is go around the panel one more time and give each of you a chance to share any parting words of wisdom, any key takeaways, a summary, or even things that you wanted to maybe were hoping to get a chance to address but didn't get to based on the way the conversation moved, but just to make some concluding remarks, if you don't mind. Chris Duncan, would you mind going first?
Data is the key to making all of this technology work, and don't be afraid of it. Learn it, store it in a way that it can work for you. And I just appreciate the time today to do this with you guys.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you. Chris Taylor?
You know, I would say, I think we all hit on it throughout this, but, you know, we need to continue to adapt, and we continue to need to move forward and move faster with our adoption of these different technologies so we don't get left in the dust. And I think a lot of people have been talking about this around the industry about, you know, needing to advance our technology to adapt to the current consumer trends. But a lot of that takes the buy-in of our clients. And I think the more we solicit it ourselves, we're out there talking to our clients about needing to embrace these new technologies and being open-minded to different ways of using these technologies, is the only way we're going to be able to advance from the letters and the phone calls that we're really making now. I mean, we've made good progress here with email. I think the next forefront that I mentioned, we have all mentioned a couple times, is really getting and embracing, you know, some of this texting protocols. But we need to be our own advocates, and we need to all understand that the technology is moving faster, and phone calls and letters are going away. So let's get out there and talk about it with everybody and get everybody embracing these ideas of being open-minded to new lines of communication.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris. Dan, you get the last word today.
Yeah, just really quickly, I know we're over our time, but I agree completely with both of the Chris's here, and I think that the data certainly is key, but the last parting shot I'd probably leave you with is go and do it. It's one of the things that we've been talking about as an industry for a long, long time. I remember being a part of a panel, I think it's probably 9-10 years ago, talking about texting and email and how it's emergent and we should go do it. And we're seeing it now. It's happening. Clients are doing it. Creditors are allowing it. CFPB is on board. Consumer preference is there. All of the plans are aligned. So if you're not already doing those things, I would encourage you to go look at that, see how you might be able to use it. But it's a here and now and not just a future item.
Excellent. Well, Chris Duncan, Chris Taylor, Dan, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your perspectives with us. This was a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I also want to thank Ontario Systems one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.ontariosystems.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and listened today. One final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar to help identify topics and speakers that will be of the best use for you. A recording of this event will be posted later today to accountsrecovery.net. And please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Everybody, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.